ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेष्व भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष पुराणार्को धुनोदितः. This is Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 6, and we'll begin with text number 9, but we have quite a bit of text to cover because there's only one purport, really. We'll go all the way to text 26, maybe even beyond that. Please repeat. Gnatva putrasya tatkarma Guruna Abhihitam Nripah Deshan Nishra Sarayam Asa Sutam Chaktavithin Rusha Gnatva Putrasya Tatkarma Guruna Abhihitam Nripah Deshan nissarayam asa sutam chaktavidhim rosha gnatva putrasya tatkarma gurunabhitam nripa deshan nissarayam asa sutam chaktavidhim rosha Gnatva putrasya tatkarma gurunabhihitam nripah deshan nissarayam asa sutam tyaktavidhim rusha Gnatva putrasya tatkarma Gurunabhihitam nripah Deshan nissarayam asa Sutam tyaktavidhim rusha Vidhim Rusha. Gnatva putrasya tatkarma gurunabhihitam nripah deshan nissarayam asa sutam chakta vidhim rusha Gnatva putrasya tatkarma Gurunabhitam ripah Deshan nissarayam asa Sutam chaktavidhim rusha deshanissarayam as sutam tyakta vidhim rutha. Ladies. Nadva putrasya tat karma guruna abhihitam ripaha deshanissarayam as guruna pihitam ripa deshanissarayam as sutam tyakta vidhim rosha. Deshanissarayamas sutam chakta vidhim rusha. Natva. Having given up. Knowing putrasya of his son, tat, that, karma, action, guruna, by the spiritual master, vashishtha, abhihitam, informed, nripaha, the king, ikshaku, deshat, from the country, nissarayam asa, drove away, sutam, his son, tyakta vidhim, because he violated the regulative principles, rusha, out of anger. Translation. When King Ikshaku, thus informed by Vashishtha, understood what his son Vikukshi had done, he was extremely angry. Thus he ordered Vikukshi to leave the country because Vikukshi had violated the regulative principles. What did Vikukshi do? He ate a rabbit. Okay, I'm just going to go on because there's no purport here. Sotu viprena samvadam gyapakena samacharan chaktva kalevaram yogi satena vapat yatparam. Having been instructed by the great and learned Brahmana Vashishtha, who discoursed about the absolute truth, Maharaj Ikshvaku became renounced. By following the principles, for a yogi, he certainly achieved the supreme perfection after giving up his material body. We don't actually get any information from the verses here about who it was who informed King Ikshaku about what happened. Srila Prabhupada has put this into his translation, but if you look carefully, you'll see it's not in the text. It just indicates the importance of commentaries. He gets this information from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, all of the acharyas have said this, so that's how we know. So he attained Param Tattvam, the Supreme Absolute Truth, because he executed the instructions given by Vishishtha, who gave him knowledge, and then therefore he became attached. Pitari uparate bhetya vikukshi prithivim imam shashad ije harim yajnyehi shashad iti vishrutaha. After his father's disappearance, Vikukshi returned to the country and thus became the king, ruling the planet Earth and performing various sacrifices to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vikukshi later became celebrated as Sashada. Anybody know what Sashada means? Yeah, he ate rabbits. Or he ate one rabbit at least. One's enough. So, Sashada. Shasha means rabbit. Ada means somebody who eats. So, Sridhar Swami says, Shashat Palayan Harim Ije. He worshipped the Lord with the rabbits that he protected. the rabbit, yes. Yes. It would seem that way, yes, it would indeed. It was seemed to be significant enough in the eyes of the Gurujanas of that day that he was driven from the kingdom, but he was allowed to come back. So it says here that by the power of his sacrifice, even though he had the flaw of being rejected by his father, still he became a great hero later on. That should be understood. Ajiv Goswami says this. Okay, text 12. Puranjayas tasya sutta indravaha itiritaha kakutstha iti chapyuktaha shrano namani karnabhihi. The son of Sashada was Puranjaya, who is also known as Indravaha and sometimes as Kakutstha. Please hear from me how he received different names for different activities. Here it's noted by Sridhar Swami and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur that he was called Puranjaya because he conquered the city of the demons. He was called Indravaha because Indra became his carrier. He was called Kakutstha because he stood on the back of a bull. Now hear how these names arose by his activities. Kritanta asit samaro devanam sahadanavehi parshnik graho vrto viro devair daitya parajitehi. Formerly there was a devastating war between the demigods and the demons. The demigods, having been defeated, accepted Puranjaya as their assistant and then conquered the demons. Therefore, this hero is known as Puranjaya, he who conquered the residence of the demons. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is called Dhananjaya because he got what? He won wealth. So because he won over the demons here, he's called, he won this city back from the demons, he's called Puranjaya. This war was similar to the destruction of the universe, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says. And Puranjaya was accepted as an ally by the devatas. Sometimes you need help, even if you're a devata. Vachanad deva devasya vishnor vishatmanah prabhoho vahanatve vrutastasya babhuvendro mahavrishya. Puranjaya agreed to kill all the demons on the condition that Indra would be his carrier. Because of pride, Indra could not accept this proposal. But later, by the order of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, Indra did accept it and became a great bull carrier for Puranjaya. So he was thinking, if Indra becomes my carrier, then I'll kill the demons. But Indra, out of shame, refused to be his carrier. But by the order of Vishnu, he became a huge bull and carried Puranjaya. Sasannadho dhanur divyam adaya vishakanchitan stuyamanas tam aruhya yuyutsuhu kakudisthitaha tejasa pyayato vishnoho purashasya mahatmanaha pratichyam dishidaityanam yaronat tridashaihi puram. Well protected by armor and desiring to fight, Puranjaya took up a transcendental bow and very sharp arrows. And while being highly praised by the demigods, he got up on the back of the bull, Indra, and sat on its hump, Thus he is known as Kakutstha. Being empowered by Lord Vishnu, who is the Supersoul and the Supreme Person, Puranjaya sat on the great bull and is therefore known as Indravaha. Surrounded by the demigods, he attacked the residents of the demons in the west. So, for your information, Kakutstha means he's situated on the hump. Kakut means a hump. And what's the other one? Indravaha means Indra became his carrier. Puranjaya, mounting the bull who was Indra, is thus called Indravaha, whose carrier is Indra. Because he sat on the lump of the bull, he's called Kakutstha. He surrounded the city with 3 tens of devatas. As you know, there are 30,000 groups of demigods. So he was working with them. Taistasya chabhut pradhanam tumulam loma harshanam yamaya bhallairanayat daityan abhiyur mrithe. There was a fierce battle between the demons and Puranjaya. Indeed, it was so fierce that even when one hears about it, one's hairs stand on end. All the demons bold enough to come before Puranjaya were immediately sent to the residence of Yamaraj by his arrows. So Acharya's commenting here say that he led to Yama, he led them to Yama means that he killed them. Tasyeshu patabhimukham yugantagnim Ivolbaram Visrija Dudravur Daitya Hanyamanehi Swam Alayam. To save themselves from the blazing arrows of Indravaha, which resembled the flames of devastation at the end of the millennium, the demons who remained when the rest of their army was killed fled very quickly to their respective homes. Tatcha drishtvan ye dudruvahu swam alayam patalam, Sridhar Swami says. Those demons who remain went to patala loka. Jitva param dhanam sarvam shastrikam vajrapanaye pratayachat sarajarishir iti namabhir ahritaha. After conquering the enemy, the saintly king Puranjaya gave everything, including the enemy's riches and wives, to Indra, who carries the thunderbolt. For this he is celebrated as Puranjaya. Thus Puranjaya is known by different names because of his different activities. Here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, by conquering the demon city, he was known as Puranjaya. He gave everything to Indra, and Indra gave it to Puranjaya. Seems Indra gave it back to him. Therefore, the king was known by various names. Another reading is Ahuta, but the meaning is the same. Puranjayasya putro abhut anenas tatsutah prithuh vishvagantis tatashchandro yuvanashvas tutatsutah. The son of Puranjaya was known as Anena. Anena's son was Prithu, and Prithu's son was Vishvaganti. Vishvaganti's son was Chandra, and Chandra's son was Yuvanashva. Shravastas tatsuto yena shravasti nirmame puri briharashvastu shravastis tatah kuvalayashvakaha. The son of Yuvanashva was Shravasta, who constructed a township known as Shravastipuri. The son of Shravasta was Briharashva, and his son was Kuvalayashva. In this way, the dynasty increased. Anybody know where Shravastipuri is? Somebody from UP might know. Northern UP, almost on the border with Nepal. It was previously a great city founded by this king, Yuvanashva. Later on, it became a great center of Buddhism, is probably more famous for that. There still remains of a great fort and monastery there. It's a historical place, very significant. But you can still see it today. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, living Bhagavatam. Now we go to text number 22. Yah priyartham utankasya dundhu namasuram bali sutanam ekavimshatya sahasre rahanadvrtah. To satisfy the sage Uttanka, the greatly powerful Kuvalyashva killed a demon named Dundhu. He did this with the assistance of his 21,000 sons. Dundhumara iti khyatas tatsutas techa jajjvaluhu dundhur mukhagnina sarve traya eva visheshitaha. Dhrithashva kapilashvascha badhrashva iti bharata dhrithashva putro haryashvo nikumbhas tatsutaha smritaha. O Maharaj Parikshit, for this reason, Kuvalyashva is celebrated as Dundhumara, the killer of Dundhu. All but three of his sons, however, were burnt to ashes by the fire emanating from Dundhu's mouth. The remaining sons were Dhritashva, Kapilashva, and Bhadrashva. From Dhritashva came a son named Haryashva, whose son is celebrated as Nikumbha. We might wonder here in this section of the Bhagavatam, this whole chapter for that matter, is mostly dealing with genealogy. That's one of the requirements of a Purana. In order to be a Purana, you have to discuss Vamshas, the various dynasties of kings. And these kings were not insignificant. They were great, great, pious, powerful characters. And we can see that because none of us know anyone who's even capable of fathering 21,000 sons. But even if you were, you would not be capable of sacrificing 20,997 of them, which is what happened. When they all helped their father attack this demon Dundhu, most of them were incinerated by flames coming out of this demon's mouth. Are we ready to be killed like this? 20,000! Throughout our shastras, we find so many examples of great devotees and pious kings and so many personalities who sacrificed their lives in the pastimes of the Lord or for the purpose of reestablishing dharma in this world. They gave up their lives and seem to have lost. We usually judge victory by whether a person has economic or political or social dominance. But it's not so. They gave their lives in dharma. Even Duryodhana, I believe it's Duryodhana, at least in Bhagavad Gita, he's discussing those men who are with him on his side. And he calls them Tyakta Jivita. They've already given their lives to me. But his words were a little prophetic because they were about to die, literally, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But we're not willing to give our lives. That's the difference. And that's why our names are not mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, except for Govinda Dasi, my god sister. Srila Prabhupada is maybe the only one, she's the only one who's mentioned in the purports of Srila Prabhupada because she brought Tulasi Devi to the West. Just as, say, these so many great, how many great souls died trying to bring Ganga to this world, if you read elsewhere in this? 60,000. So here it's only a third of that. So, anyway, so these are the great kings, and we'll read a little bit. Actually, Dundhu, he was a notorious asura, and he was the son of Madhukaitava, small world. We all know Madhukaitava. Who were Madhukaitava? Brahma was born from the lotus of Vishnu, who was lying in meditation on the surface of the water. He's called Anantashayana. He lies on top of Anantashesh. When I was in South India, there's a famous temple of that name, Anantashayana, or Padmanabha Swami. In fact, they've just located several treasuries underground in that temple, making it the wealthiest temple, I think, in India now. And we'll see what happens to all that wealth. But in the courtyard of this temple, there's a small shrine to Lord Krishna. And on the wall of that temple, there's a beautiful old painting, old painting, faded. And it shows Krishna lying on top of Balaram, who is lying on his back on the ground. And Mother Yashoda is looking at both of them, and she has a puzzled look on her face. You have to understand, this deity is Ananta Shayana, Lord Vishnu lying on the serpent bed of Sheshanaga, who is none other than Balaram. So anyway, this is Ananta Shayana. Lord Vishnu lies on the water. The lotus comes out of his navel, for which he's called Padmanabha Swami, the Lord whose navel is given birth to a lotus. And Brahma is born in that lotus, or at least he sits on top of that lotus flower. And these two demons, they appeared, Madhu and Kaitava, and they terrified Brahma by shaking the stalk of a lotus. Sometimes you see the monkeys in Vrindavan, they grab onto a Bijli Stampa, an electricity pole, and they vigorously shake it. So this is the nature of the demons. Our minds work like this also, isn't it? That's why we chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So they were shaking this lotus, and Brahma was understandably terrified. And he was afraid of the suras, and he jumped out of his lotus and began running. He didn't know what was happening. So hearing the cries of Brahma, Lord Vishnu awoke, and Vishnu decided that he would employ conciliation as his first expedient. How do we deal with people who are opponents? There are four ways, according to the Niti Shastra. Anybody know? What? You offer them a post. Okay. That's the second class way. Anything else? That's the first class way. Logic argument. Flattery is third class way, and the stick is the last resort. So Lord Vishnu thought, these demons, they tend to be very passionate. So let me try to conciliate them somehow. That's, you bribe them sometimes. Either you flatter them or you bribe them. But one way or another, with a passionate person, this is how you deal. So the arrogant demons, then they asked Lord Vishnu to ask a boon from them. They are offering boon to Lord Vishnu. And Vishnu replied, if that's so, then the boon is that you must be killed by me. So they had to surrender at that point, because any demon, he'll never surrender his pride, right? And pride is linked to your honor, and your honor is linked to whether you keep up your word. So this is a thing. It's an interesting thing. So he tricked them in this way, as Vishnu always does. He, not always, but very often he does this. So they agreed, but we have to be killed in an atmosphere that's not cloudy. So Lord Vishnu killed them in an atmosphere that was clear, no problem. So they had a son, these two demons, Madhu Kaitava, and their son was Dundu, this demon that we're talking about. And because Vishnu had killed his fathers, Dundu had decided to take revenge on all the gods, including Vishnu. With this idea, Dundu began to do penance in the desert called Ujjalaka. I guess it's in Rajasthan, maybe, because it's Maru Dhanwa. Maru is usually means for Rajasthan. So standing on one leg, they did penance, he did penance for thousands of years. And then Brahma came before him and gave him the boon that he would not be killed by the Devas, Danavas, Asuras, Rakshasas, Yakshas, Uragas, serpents, etc. So with this boon, he thought he was invincible, and he began to live beneath the sand in the desert. A few miles to the west, there are still demons who live under the earth in bunkers in Afghanistan and other places. But his idea was to destroy the gods. Now, there was a sage named Uttanka who had erected his ashram in another part of this desert and was doing penance there. So by his penance, Lord Vishnu was pleased to appear before him. And the sage made a request that this Dundu's activities are too fearful and treacherous. You have to put a stop to them. So Lord Vishnu gave him the benediction that Dundu has become a curse to the three worlds, and there's a king named Kuvalayashva. He's going to kill Dundu, and with these words, Lord Vishnu disappeared. Sometimes Lord Vishnu also does this. Lord Vishnu works in tricky ways sometimes. He will tell you what's going to happen, and then he disappears. He won't do it himself. Sometimes you have to wait a little while. So we have to be patient. If you've got some demons that you're having trouble killing, just understand why Rupa Goswami says you have to be patient. You've got to follow everything. You've got to keep good association, give up bad association, etc., etc. So, Uttanka went to the place of Kulavalyashva and told him what Vishnu said. So then Kulavalyashva and his sons went to the forest and killed Dundu. But he sacrificed all but three of his 21,000 sons in that process because he knew this is the order of Vishnu. Again, Tyakta Jivita. If even the demons can give their lives, what more than should we say about ourselves? We've been given our mission also. We have to fulfill that mission against all the odds. Sometimes, those of us who are puffed up, Lord Vishnu himself, he likes to humiliate us, just as he did with Lord Indra. Because maranadatirichyate, worse than death is for someone who's been honored to be dishonored, isn't it? So especially if you're Indra. So what did he do to Indra? You remember? We read it already. He forced him to become the carrier of this king. So, anyway. So that brings us to text number. Therefore, he's known as Dundumar, Kulayashva, the killer of Dundum. That brings us to text number 25. Bahulashvo nikambhasya krashashvo tasya senajit yuvanashvo bhavatasya sanapatyo vanam gata. The son of Nikumbha was Bahulashva. The son of Bahulashva was Krishashva. The son of Krishashva was Senajit. And the son of Senajit was Yuvanashva. Yuvanashva had no sons, and thus he retired from family life and went to the forest. Bharya shatena nirvinna rishayosya kripalavaha ishtim sma vartayam chakru aindrim te susamahitaha. Although Yuvanashva went to the forest with his 100 wives, and he took them all into the forest, all of them were very morose. Sometimes even if you take your wife to Vrindavan, she becomes morose, because it's it's not easy, forest life. It's interesting. I recently in Chicago, I met with an old godbrother, Prithu Shrava, anybody know him? Yeah, very nice preacher. So he calls himself a vanaprastha because he lives in a van. And he and his wife are constantly traveling in a van. So this is also vanaprastha existence. So he went into the forest with 100 wives, but all of them were very morose. The reason they were morose is, well, we'll see. The sages in the forest, however, being very kind to the king, began very carefully and attentively performing an Indra-yajna so that the king might have a son. So how complicated life is. The very Indra who was humiliated by one of his forefathers, now they're worshipping him to get a boon from him. So that the king might have a son. That was actually the cause of the bharyas, of the wives being nirvinna, or depressed. They didn't have a son. So we finally have a Bhaktivedanta purport. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. He says here, one may enter the vanaprastha order of life with his wife, but the vanaprastha order means complete retirement from household life. Although King Yuvanashva retired from family life, he and his wives were always morose because he had no son. It's not so easy to give up household life. And here it seems from what Prabhupada has written that even the king was also morose, that he had no son. Shall we keep reading, or is it time to stop now? It's 8:15, 8:20. There's not a whole lot to say. Even on these verses, the Acharya's commentaries are quite sparse. This purport is also quite sparse. The point is very clear. Does anybody have any questions or any comments on anything so far? Yes, through to Karma Prabhu.
Would it be correct to say that one of the reasons why this material is included in the Bhagavatam is that it's leading up to the dynasty in which Krishna appears? We've been going through so many cantos, so many histories, and now we're coming up to the 10th canto, and these dynastic lists will lead to the dynasty in which Krishna appears.
I think so. I mean, I'm not aware of any explicit statement that says that, but it seems sensible enough. I was going to mention that this king named Kakutstha, he is the forefather of Ramchandra, who is therefore known as Kakutstha. One of Ramchandra's fancy Sanskrit names is Kakutstha, the descendant of Kakutstha. It's like that in many cases. And we'll see what other things are happening. In a few verses, after we finish hearing about Yuvanashva and his ordeal, then we'll hear about Saupari Muni. Shall I go continue reading? Okay, there's another purport. So this is text number 27. Raja tadyagya sadanam pravishto nishitarshitah drishtva shayanan vipranstan papau mantra jalam swayam. Being thirsty one night, the king entered the arena of sacrifice, and when he saw all the brahmanas lying down, he personally drank the sanctified water meant to be drunk by his wife. This sort of thing we find in the Bhagavatam as well. Somebody has some special sweet rice, and then somebody else drinks it, and it causes problems. Purport. Yajnas performed by Brahmanas according to Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are so potent that the sanctifying of water by Vedic mantras can bring about the desired result. In this instance, the Brahmanas sanctified the water so that the king's wife might drink it in the yajna. But by providence, the king himself went there at night and, being thirsty, drank the water. Yeah, again, we don't have any purports here for some time, but I'm going to read because I don't want to leave you all hanging. Uttitas te nishamyatha vyutakam kalasham prabho papruchu kasya karmedam pitam pitam pungsavanam jalam. This is pungsavana jala. When the brahmanas got up from bed and saw the water pot empty, they inquired who had done this work of drinking the water meant for begetting a child. It's almost like eating a rabbit that's meant for offering in a Shraddha ceremony. Of course, it's been pointed out already that we don't offer rabbits anymore in Kali Yuga, even in the Shraddha ceremony. Rajnya pitam viditva vai ishvara prahitena te ishvaraya namaschakrur aho deva balam balam. When the brahmanas came to understand that the king, inspired by the supreme controller, had drunk the water, they all exclaimed, "Alas, the power of providence is real power. No one can counteract the power of the supreme." In this way they offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord. Sometimes when a thing is just fated to be, there's nothing that anybody can do, no matter what, if Krishna wants it to happen. I remember when we were studying the fifth canto, it was described there in regards to Maharaj Priyavrata. As you know, Maharaj Priyavrata did not want to get married. He was detached. But his superiors basically forced him to get married. In much the same way that Lord Vishnu forced Indra to become the bull carrier for a human king. And once he got married, then he found that he actually became quite happy there, and he became very attached. And it was hard for him to give it up. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments in that passage that there are three reasons that a devotee has to undergo reverses, because Priyavrata was a great devotee. He says one of them is that he has committed some offense. That's the usual reason, the main reason. Another reason is that he may have some karma that has to play itself out, or that Lord desires to play itself out in order to mature that devotee. That also happens. And a third reason is really troubling. The third reason is that it's the desire of the Lord or his devotees that one undergo tribulation. The desire of the Lord. It would seem from what we've heard here that this was the desire of the Lord, that this king would become, the word is used, apasmriti. He would lose his sense of what was happening and just go and drink this water. Entering the yajna, seeing that the Brahmins were asleep, it would seem as if this was a deliberate transgression. But somehow he became bewildered to do this. Just like we become bewildered on occasion when fate has its way with us. And he drank the water. And the Brahmanas, when they found out, they thought, amazing how Lord Vishnu's potency works. Nobody can. If it's meant to be, it's just meant to be. This is the point. Likitamapilalate pranchitam kasamarta, as we like to say. Whatever fate is written on your forehead in the realm of karma, and you cannot erase that code upon your forehead. But when Lord Vishnu wants something to happen, there's absolutely nothing you could do. Now, even more troubling than that, even when Vishnu's devotees or devotee wants something to happen to you for some inscrutable reason that we should probably not speculate on, that also is inexorable. It has to happen. Sometimes it's described in the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, it's described that sometimes the devatas, they become envious of a devotee. A person who is either, well, we'll say a mixed devotee, because the devatas are themselves also mixed devotees, but mixed devotees with vastly superior karma than ourselves. We all exist in relationships with each other, adipotic relationships, that means physical relationships, with not only with each other, but with the elements themselves. That's what sustains us in this world. A healthy relationship with the cosmos. We think that we're airtight in these physical bodies, but these physical bodies are interacting with the external environment all the time. And the more we allow the external environment to become polluted, the more we pollute ourselves. You are what you eat, and you are what you do as well. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is a matter not of changing your activities, but changing what you are. That's a much more difficult task. Anyway, we also have adidaivik relationships. They're impelled by fate, as we see here. And we have adhyatmic relationships, in which some person is superior, another person is inferior. And that's determined by our own karma, again, by our own doing. Purusha prakatistho hi bhunkte prakatajan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasyat yoni janmasu. And in the previous shloka, what does Krishna say? He says, the happiness and distress that we get is caused by what? Ourselves. The material nature is moving things around, but we're the ones who set that process in motion. By karma. So the devas are like this. They're very superior to us. And sometimes if they, for whatever reason, want to check our advancement, in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it said that even if a farmer who has 1,000 or 1,000,000 cows still doesn't want to lose a single one of them, So similarly, the devas, who they subsist in a symbiotic relationship with ourselves, they don't want us, anybody, to check out of the karma, the system of karma, because that system of debits and credits is what sustains them. We are sustaining the demigods as much as the demigods are sustaining ourselves. That's what it means, symbiosis. Anyway, so here we see that this fate is overwhelming. So let's go on. Tata kala upavrtte kukshim nirvhidya dakshinam yuvanashvasya tanayash chakravarti jajanaha. Thereafter, in due course of time, a son with all good symptoms of a powerful king came forth from the lower right side of King Yuvanashva's abdomen. The king himself gave birth out of the side of his stomach. Kam dhasyati kumaroyam stanye roruyate brisham mam dhata vatsamaro dhir itindro deshinim adat. The baby cried so much for breast milk that all the Brahmins were very unhappy. Who will take care of this baby, they said. Then Indra, who was worshipped in that yajna, came and sold us the baby. Do not cry, Indra said. Then Indra put his index finger in the baby's mouth and said, you may drink me. Who is this baby? Huh? Mandhata. Maharaj Mandhata. He's very famous king, father of Mushukunda. And Mandhata is the word used here. His name is Mandhata because this is what Indra spoke when he was born. He was crying for milk. There's no mother there. There's only sages and, you know. So what to do? So Indra put his finger in his mouth and said, drink me, Mandhata. You may drink me. Therefore, he's called Mandhata. Okay. Namamara pitatasya vipradeva prasadataha yuvanashva tatatreva tapasa siddhimanvagat. Like his forefathers. Because King Yuvanashva, the father of the baby, was blessed by all the brahmanas, he did not fall victim to death. He could have died by that. You can imagine if a man gives birth to anything, you know, say, you know, a person comes out of your side, it's probably going to kill you. But he was blessed by the Brahmins, so he didn't die. After this incident, he performed severe austerities and achieved perfection in that very spot. You can imagine what this would do to you if you had such an experience. Sometimes people have these experiences where they see something paranormal, and it completely changes their lives. So this is evidently what happened to this king. And on that very spot, it seemed he didn't leave that place. He just executed tapasa until he achieved perfection. So, trasad dasyuritindranga vidathe nama yasyave yasmat trasanti yudigna dasyavo ravanadayaha yovanashva tamandhata chakravartyavanim prabho sapta dvipavatim ekaha Shashasat Chyutatejasa. Mandhata, the son of Yuvanashva, was the cause of fear for Ravana and other thieves and rogues who caused anxiety. O King Parikshit, because they feared him, the son of Yuvanashva was known as Trasad Dasyu. Dasyu means rascals or thieves, and Trasa means they were afraid of him. This name was given by King Indra. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Yuvanashva was so powerful that when he became the emperor, he ruled the entire world, consisting of seven islands, without any second ruler. Ije chayaknyam kratubhir atmavid puridakshinaihi sarvadeva mayam devam sarvatmakam atindriyam dravyam mantrovithir yaknyo yajamanas tatartajaha dhanamo deshas chakalascha sarvam etad yat atmakam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not different from the auspicious aspects of great sacrifices, such as the ingredients of the sacrifice, the chanting of the Vedic hymns, the regulative principles, the performer, the priests, the result of the sacrifice, the arena of sacrifice, and the time of sacrifice. Knowing the principles of self-realization, Mandhata worshipped that transcendentally situated Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, who comprises all the demigods. He also gave immense charity to the Brahmanas and thus performed yajna to worship the Lord. One more verse, then we stop. Yavat surya udeti sma yavat cha pratitishtati tat sarvam yovanashvasya mandhatuhu kshetram uchyate. All places from where the sun rises on the horizon, shining brilliantly, to where the sun sets are known as the possession of the celebrated Mandhata, the son of Yuvanashva. He was so wealthy that when he performed sacrifice, he had all this golden paraphernalia and he just left it. That's why Arjuna is called Dhananjaya. He went and got it. King Mandhata left it there. I think we should stop here. Any other questions or any comments? Anybody? Arjita Prabhu.
This last point about providence can be quite difficult to understand. For instance, when Prabhupada was here, sometimes devotees would do things that were, let's say, not the desired result. Something would happen, they would squander some money or something would go averse. And they would say like this, well, it must be Krishna's desire, Krishna's will. And Prabhupada said, no, it's your nonsense.
Yeah.
It's your foolishness that caused this. No, it's not Krishna's desire. It's not providence. So how to distinguish? Because sometimes it seems there's a reverse, like you said, to devotees, and there are these causes, these three causes. And how do you distinguish when it's one of those three causes or when it's your own screw-up?
Well, in fact, we can extend the question to apply to all three possibilities. Whether it's your karma, whether it's an offense, whether it's Lord Vishnu directly intervening in your life. How do we know? The answer is that we don't know. But these things are very rare. That's a fact. That we do know. And Krishna himself admits in chapter 3 that, you know, karma, akarma, vikarma, you cannot understand these things. The intricacies of these things are too sophisticated, too subtle. It's not really possible. But the principles of karma we can understand. If you do bad, then you suffer. If you do good, then you're elevated. And if you surrender to Krishna, then you're going back home, back to Godhead. That much we can understand. And a devotee, part of the process of surrendering to Krishna is that a devotee always wants to cultivate humility. And cultivating humility, a devotee always assumes, I'm the worst offender. He assumes it's because of my offense. As even Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, what to speak of anyone else. Even he says, I'm lower than a worm in stool. Anyone who hears my name becomes cursed. You see? So this is our policy generally. Is that okay? Yeah. Anaratam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you very much for such a wonderful class. You mentioned that still now there are demons in somewhere in Afghanistan.
In what?
Demons in Afghanistan.
So, well, there are demons everywhere, just to be fair.
Yeah, but my question is, those demons that you're talking about, are demons like still from previous ages, or you're talking demons like terrorists?
I'm talking like terrorists. But you also have to understand that the reason there are terrorists is because they're being harassed by demons on this side in order to keep the price of gas below $5. And such things. I mean, you know, therefore we should know that there are demons everywhere. And relevant to Arjita Prabhu's very valuable point, we should recognize first and foremost that the biggest demon is right here in my own heart. Every one of us should think like this. And then we can make advancement. If we're thinking otherwise, it's dangerous. Okay? One more question. Here. Last question. It's late.
Thank you, Prabhupada. It could be Krishna's desire if devotees still try to enjoy, even by subtle way.
If devotees...
try to enjoy.
Try to what?
Enjoy. Enjoy.
Injure.
Enjoy.
To enjoy.
Yeah, it could be also Krishna's desire.
How so?
But I don't mean like four regular principles, another things like, you know, in subtle way, by food or by dress.
Yeah. Okay, well, yes, it's certainly Krishna's desire that we all enjoy. There's no doubt about that. In fact, Krishna consciousness is only meant to give us our eternal enjoyment. That is the purpose of human life, Srila Prabhupada said.
Like, if you collect more than necessary in that things, it's also can be Krishna's desires.
If what?
If you collect more than necessary.
Well, that's, but we're instructed not to do that, so it's not Krishna's desire.
But if you still continue to do that, how to understand karma or Krishna's desires?
We understand what Krishna wants, as according to what Krishna says. And in the end of chapter 16, Krishna says that you should understand what to do and what not to do on the basis of what's enjoined in the scripture. The scripture you should understand according to the parampara in which your spiritual master appears and gives you pertinent instructions for your day-to-day existence. So if we have spiritual master and we're following the parampara, and it's according to Shastra, then this is a very clear path for progress. We don't need to speculate on anything else. And Krishna's not going to contradict himself. He's consistent in that way. That's the easy answer.
Yeah, I just remember, like, in Vrindavan, someone said to Aindra Prabhu that Prabhu, he eats a lot, like sweet. He said, oh, no problem, because maybe he did a lot of austerities previous life, and in this life, Krishna allowed him to enjoy.
Okay, I have no comment on that because it's not directly connected, but we'll stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.